Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Weight loss solutions are not one size fits all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you. With 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
Welcome, Red Sox fans. Here are the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome, everyone. The Bastards are back for this midweek edition of the podcast. We are brought to you in part by the Minute Media Podcast Network. The Red Sox just wrapped up a three-game set with the New York Yankees, getting swept all three games, and the Red Sox are now third place in the American League East, six games back from the first place Tampa Bay Rays. Quick disclaimer for any first-time listeners, and if there was an episode for a disclaimer, this would be the one. This is not a homer podcast. We call it how we see it. When the Red Sox are dominating, we will celebrate that. Not tonight. When they are getting destroyed, we will be critical and at times savagely blunt. If you are easily offended, press the stop button immediately. But for those who embrace it, let's get rolling. I am Terry Cushman, coming to you from Lewiston, Maine. You can harass me on Twitter at CushmanMLB. You can find the podcast account at Bastards_Boston. Co-hosting with me tonight from the Mile High City of Denver, by way of Quincy, Massachusetts, Andrew Dwan. Andrew?
No pleasantries tonight. Just hanging in there, reading the MLB pipeline over and over again, just looking at pictures of Marcelo Meyer to get me through this one.
Nothing like 2025 or, you know, whatever year it's going to be when he gets called up. But the interim is pretty ugly right now. So
yeah, definitely a rough stretch right now.
Also joining us tonight from the nation's capital by way of Newport, Rhode Island, Job Goddard. Job?
Andrew hit the nail on the head. No pleasantries. Today sucked. Plawecki was safe.
The game ending play was close to end this third game, but they called him out, and I think at best it was inconclusive, to be honest. But and I thought the throw might have nipped him, but the umpires upheld the call, and the inning did not continue. There would have been one run would have scored, and then there would have been runners on first and second. So Yeah, I just didn't want the bases to get loaded because then we're really screwed. You know, just string together some base hits and drive them in and just keep two on base. And you know, maybe we can win it that way. Bases get loaded, it's an automatic no score. It was an automatic win in the first half, automatic no score in the second half. It's just brutal. And I'm making fun of the first game where we had bases loaded. It was the seventh inning, Red Sox down by two. Ball leaves the infield, you know, tie game at the very least. And that kind of set the tone for the series. But where can they find you on Twitter, Andrew?
At Andrew Dwan MLB.
Job?
For now, they can find me at Job MLB, at J-O-B MLB. But if this losing streak doesn't end, they can find me at Sell the Team.
Yeah. You know, Steve Cohen was shooting his mouth off about his own players, and
at least he cares.
Yeah, and for a slight second there, I was jealous. I'm like, oh man, look at that, calling him out, putting the pressure on. But obviously, I mean, he can't make a habit of that, and that's like, no. Yeah,
especially after he just failed to sign his number 11 pick and didn't spend any of their bonus money. Yeah, he. Steve Cohen, this is not the way you appeal to free agent players in the offseason.
I wouldn't want to play for him, but I really do want some form of recognition from this ownership group that them being cheap is going to cost us a playoff run here.
It could. We're going to get into all of that tonight. So let me just tell you about our sponsor. Attention listeners across the galaxy, all the way from Australia to Houston. Do we have a pube problem? If so, our friends at Manscaped have cleared you for takeoff with the fourth generation and brand new Lawnmower 4.0. Kick your pubes to the next planet with the Performance Package 4.0. The orbits in your pants will feel like you're in zero gravity when you use the best tools for the job from the leaders in male grooming. Join the 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped and get your rocket ready for takeoff by going to manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping with the code FANSIDED20. The Lawnmower 4.0 also has a 4000K LED spotlight that you can turn on and off when needed for a more precise shave throughout your travels across the universe. Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code FANSIDED20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code FANSIDED20 at manscaped.com. For a clean Trinity and beyond, your space balls will thank you.
So it's getting smoother, Terry. You're getting smoother with that.
A little bit. I'll never be as good as Charlie.
You can work it into another sponsorship to that with the it's getting smoother.
Yeah. I don't have a voice for podcasting. I'm extremely self-aware. I'm very nasally. I'm very monotone. I just try to be captivating and hammer my points hard, and that's the best I've got. So Charlie has a voice for podcasting, and I'm envious of that. But so just to go over the scores one last time, Tuesday, game one of the doubleheader, lost that one 5-3. That was with Tanner Houck starting. Game two later that evening, the Red Sox fell flat on their face, didn't score a run, lost that one 2-0 despite the best efforts of Nathan Eovaldi. And then, of course, tonight, lost that one 5-2 with Nick Pivetta on the mound. Pivetta only lasted 1 2/3 inning, was not sharp. Bobby Dalbec did not do him any favors by not snagging that ball on the first baseline. Probably not the easiest play, but, you know, most average first baseman probably come up with that most of the time. Two runs scored on it, and the Red Sox never recovered. It seems like if we
had...
Go ahead.
Well, I just rewinded just a little bit. I had more of an issue with JD's. I mean, that was in his damn glove. He was playing so far back. That one I thought was worse.
And it was a bad throw.
I mean, he's not an outfielder.
Yeah, but he wants to get paid like one.
Oh, he's the happiest person on planet Earth that he's playing in the outfield of recent, because it expands his market by 15 teams guaranteed instead of just being an American League player. But you can't make plays like that and expect to get paid the way he wants to get paid.
Well, that might have been his first error of the season out there, unless he had one.
He's actually been pretty good this year.
I think I had him as my dud last series because that throw to third that allowed the runner to go to second. So
he's made some things that weren't errors.
Boneheaded plays, yeah, just like stupid things, which I get it, you don't usually play, but I don't know, it's just going back to fundamentals. That really sucked, and then he didn't get anything on the throw.
Yeah, the throw was also bad. He kind of bounced it, and typically he has a pretty good arm. And had it been a good throw, he might have stood a chance to get Odor out, because Odor didn't have a good view of the catch, didn't know if he made it or not. And
yeah, he thought it was, which should have been. I don't blame him.
It could have been, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So
with Renfro and Wright, he's out by 5 feet.
True.
Renfro,
yeah.
I mean, Renfro caught that.
Fair enough.
True. So, all right, we'll get into the duds side of things. Maybe some stud talk if we get to it. But Andrew, go ahead. You're dud for the series.
Mine was easy. I think I called it in the fifth inning, and this is how I felt after game one when the bases got stranded when they were. You know, bases were absolutely loaded, and Devers didn't come through. Rafael Devers has been in a prolonged slump right now. In his last 30 games, he's hitting .276, which, I mean, not the worst, but definitely not Devers-esque. In the last 15, he's hitting .250. In the last 7, he's hitting .200. But the problems are even worse since July 6th, where he's hitting .179 with runners in scoring position. And he's swinging from his heels like, you know, they need to hit an 8-run home run every time he's up at bat. And that's not what they need. So I don't know what the heck is going on with him. We can't afford him to be expanding the zone, which seems to be a team-wide pandemic right now. I don't know what he has to do to get back into the right mental state, but it's not there right now, and it sucks because he's the guy that you need to be driving in all the runs. He is the run producer of this Red Sox team. I mean, obviously we have JD and Xander too, but Devers is the guy that you want to pay big money, and you want to pay big money to come through in these situations. And he's just not right now, and it's really setting the team back.
Well, I think there's a couple of reasons why not. Andrew, I think it's pretty clear. And Terry, I'm curious to see what you have to say as well. He's pressing. He's one of those young players who's been around the team for a little while. Normally, the moment's not too big. But right now, he's feeling the pressure. And it's because he is the big run producer on this team. And every loss where he doesn't come up clutch the way he did in the first half, he's feeling a little bit more, and he's swinging a little bit more from his heels. And that get right series that we were supposed to have in Baltimore, it didn't really affect him. The only player that seemed to really benefit from it was Bobby Dalbec. So, and JD Martinez as well. The rest of his team is still pressing for hits. They were able to crush the little league pitching that the Orioles put out, but it wasn't because of great approach. It wasn't because they were taking pitches for balls or taking walks. It was because they're lucky enough that those balls were all flat breaking balls. Right now, they're on top of all breaking balls, and they're behind all fastballs. Really stuck in the middle.
Well, I wanted to get into this a little bit later, but since you brought it up, the pressing issue, and they all are. They are gripping that bat so tight right now, it's ridiculous. Everyone's trying to be the hero because everyone sees kind of the little bit of free fall they're going through. And whenever
only Kevin Pulecki has that clutch gene, everyone else is just kind of off.
No, I'm just saying, just like up and down the lineup right now, everyone's feeling the pressure building up. You know, we could build a diamond in that clubhouse right now. And they just need to play baseball, and they're not doing that right now. I don't know what kind of day off they need tomorrow. I was joking around. They need to go to like a water park and just let loose. Something needs to happen where they need a stress relief, and to get back to the happy-go-lucky, you know, let's push a guy down the dugout in a laundry basket, fun team that they had, and that'll work wonders.
Well, with Devers real quick, when he's swinging from his heels, that's obviously a problem, and he just needs to go back to good contact hitting where he's simply driving the ball. And he's
absolutely
got one of the highest average exit velocities in Major League Baseball. So a lot of those might be home runs anyway, but he's just – it's almost like Benintendi a couple years ago. Remember he tried to – switch to being more of a home run hitter. He thought it would increase his value, and it did him in. And I don't think Devers is quite going to completely fall off that same cliff, but like you guys said, it's hurting his production when he was simply just a good hitter. Led the league in doubles. Do that. Just do that every year. Be top five
in
doubles.
He's feeling that pressure. And it's not just the pressure of we need to win. It's the pressure of I need to win this for us. And if you look at it, you know, he's leading the league in with runners in scoring position and hitting. Even with his prolonged slump, because he was that good in the first half. Every time there's a runner in scoring position now, you can see him almost lean back like he really wants to be able to reach that high fastball and drive it. Some of that is because the team is struggling around him. Some of that is because he wants, like most players want, those individual accolades. And that's just unfortunate. Some of that comes with age. Some comes with winning. I was hoping that Cora would be able to temper some of that, you know, for the good of the team and all of that. I want Rafael Devers to just chill out, you know, and not take himself so seriously. Play baseball with that big goofy grin of his that he has when he's hitting home runs, because the home runs will come. He had a string of bad luck there around July 6th, Andrew, and I don't have the numbers in front of me this time, but where he was scalding balls for about a 10-day stretch there, and they were all finding a glove. It's almost like he's trying to lift the ball over the glove of the outfielders. He's like, no, I'm going to just take this away from them, and that's kind of where this issue is coming up. I think a big part of it as well is the shakeup that this team is kind of going through. As much as it's Cora trying to press the right buttons, like, I kind of miss when our problems were finding a leadoff hitter. Now it's finding any hitter.
Well, remember what I said at the start of the season, we've got a bunch of seven hole hitters, and that's what it's playing like right now. And I was happy to be wrong about that in the first half. So I'd like that trend to continue. But, Job, who's your dud for the series?
You know, I kind of want to change this on the fly. But my dud for the series is going to be Josh Taylor. I'm just gonna keep things simple. He came in when we needed a stop. He's been that guy all season long. And he simply didn't have it. He lost us that game alongside Garrett Whitlock because they were walking too many guys, and when they got frustrated, they just laid a ball in there. You can't do that against big league lineups. The Yankees, for as much losing as they've done all season, are a great lineup. 1-5, they're pretty damn good, and they have power throughout. The fact that Gallo is up there now changes the entire perspective of that lineup, because now those righty hitters are getting to face left-handed pitching, because you don't want a righty-lefty matchup with Gallo. that's part of the reason you make that move with Taylor, is to bring him in to face the lefties. But then he has to also face the righties. And the righties have been absolutely reading Josh Taylor the last couple of weeks like a book. He looks like the Josh Taylor of spring training and not the Josh Taylor of June, July, even April and May.
Yeah, it wasn't good. It was definitely ugly. He couldn't get a strike to save his life, and that's what set us back. I mean, he didn't come in with the bases clean whatsoever there, but at some point, you got to make a pitch. Honestly, I didn't fear Gallo a single time that series. I'm not going to lie. I didn't whatsoever, because I thought you make a pitch to this guy, you'll strike him out. And they just weren't – pitches weren't made. But, yeah, Taylor had to be better than that, because right now he is our lefty out of the bullpen, even though Austin Davis is actually – been a little bit better than the numbers have shown. So come back soon, Darwinson. I know you were doing some rehab lately. Just come back and throw strikes.
And Brazier as well, even though he's a righty. The other problem I think some of these guys are facing is they're being overused. I mean, we've leaned on Taylor quite a bit and Ottavino.
Yeah, I don't think it's their fault. Right. I mean, I can't blame Josh Taylor for not being perfect the whole season. I mean, he was perfect from May through the end of June. One of the best stretches we've ever seen from a lefty reliever. He's coming back down to earth. It was bound to happen. It just sucks that it's happening when the team needs a win. Like, desperately need a win, and the bullpen is, like, finally letting them down. This is the exact inverse of what was happening the last time we had a losing streak, where the starters were just absolutely shitting the bed, and the defense and the bullpen were going to have to pull them back. Now it's like the starters are giving you a close game into the fifth and sixth innings, and the bullpen's so gassed. They have nothing left in the tank right now that they just don't have any bullets. Everything they're throwing is flat. Their sliders are flat. Their curveballs are flat. Their fastballs are not getting up enough in the zone. When you watch the hop on the fastball, it's tailing up, sure, but you need it above the strike zone, above the letters, where the bat can't get there, and instead it's just an inch too low, and hitters are driving it the opposite way. It's happened twice in this series.
Hopefully, I mean, we should be getting Brazier back by the end of the week, and Darwin's in right around then, and so you can... Instead of going to Taylor one night, you switch him out with Darwin's in instead of Ottavino on a given night. Maybe Brazier takes that spot, or even Salamora. But looking through the box here, not one hitter in the Red Sox lineup had more than two hits throughout the series. Two hits or less for literally everybody.
I mean, they were hitting some balls hard, and they were literally just making plays on freaking everything. Like, Dahlbeck, I can't believe the luck he had. He strike a line drive right up the middle, you know, like, and it gets caught. And then he had another one earlier today. And it's just ridiculous. The balls that they're hitting at, like, 107 miles an hour that are getting robbed, and then, like, a 42-mile-an-hour EV, like, blew. With the bases loaded, lands for the Yankees. That was just so frustrating.
Well, that's baseball, right? And it sucks that that's how it happens. But when it rains, it pours, and we got every single break for the first half of the season. Now we're getting none, right? So the way that I look at the rest of the schedule here, thank God we have an easy schedule. And easy's in quotation marks, because nothing for this team right now is easy. But we have, according to strength of schedule, the fifth easiest schedule remaining among all teams. It's by far the easiest in the American League East, hopefully enough to secure us a wild card spot, though my hopes are dwindling. And if this Red Sox team can ride Chris Sale and a rejuvenated Eddie Rodriguez and Nate Eovaldi to a couple of wins against Texas, we might have a chance. We might have a chance to split the series with Tampa and be in good shape.
I'm just going to say it right now. I haven't said it on the podcast yet. I haven't tweeted it yet, but I don't think we're going to the playoffs. I really don't.
There goes the Kool-Aid. Terry was drinking it. He finally started.
I had a couple of sips. I had a couple of sips, especially at the end of June when we had that tough 5-week stretch and played well during that stretch. But I don't see the Yankees scuffling much. Oakland has some issues now with their rotation with the Bassett situation. He took a line drive off the head the other night. And, you know, been scuffling a little bit, but I don't think we're a playoff team.
Here's where it is. So the next week to 10 days is actually pretty interesting. Go White Sox. The White Sox have Tampa Bay. The White Sox are finishing with Oakland tomorrow. And then Oakland, they're facing the Mariners and the Yankees. I think the White Sox are facing the Yankees the series after, and they're also facing Toronto. So you get a lot. If Chicago goes on a run, they can literally make us games back very quickly. As long
so
as
I'm a Tony La Russa fan now. Like, now we're big Tony La Russa fans.
And then, for like 2 weeks. Right? Well, and then I'm just going through this right now. The A's go through a stretch where they get the – on August 23rd and 24th, they get the Mariners. Then they have four against the Yankees. So either way, you know, if we take care of business during that series, we gain at least two in that stretch if we go, you know, 4-0 over there. The A's got the Blue Jays, who I think we don't really have to worry about too much longer. And then I would hate to be an A's fan. This is not A's podcast. I'm sorry going along with this so long. But from the 20th to October 3rd of September, they only face the Mariners and the Astros. So that's the easiest stretch of the season for the Red Sox. The Red Sox have
easiest stretch of the season Baltimore starts tomorrow.
Well, yeah, but Baltimore and Washington. So
to end the season.
Yeah,
on the road.
It's we have a lunch. To You got to take care of business first.
We have to win. We have to win. Yeah. And we're not winning.
They should be able to.
Now, Terry, Andrew, what is the key to the Red Sox making the playoff? Between here and the end of the season, give me one thing.
Play 600 ball.
That's a simple answer. What brings us to 600 ball? What's the one thing they need to fix?
Well, they're not facing the AL East for the first time in like a year. Coming up, which is finally nice. The AL East is, I mean, honestly, probably the best division in baseball right now. I don't think the NL West is anymore.
It's a Padres implosion.
Exactly. And if anyone wants to get mad about a trade deadline, look to San Diego. But, yeah, you have to take care of business against these shitty teams that are coming up, and that is the key to all of this. The Red Sox have an easy stretch now. They got an easy stretch to end the season. And the Mariners' schedule is a nightmare. Or the A's schedule is a nightmare. I could probably look at the Mariners. It's probably going to be very similar to what, Oakland's facing. So
Mark the date here, Terry. We're schedule watching, and it's August 18th at 11:58 p.m. We're schedule watching already.
The Mariners' schedule, I'm going right now, it is not easy. The Red Sox have an opportunity in mid-September to put them out of their misery.
Call me a sucker here, Andrew. Call me a sucker here, and you both will. Terry definitely will. I'm still only watching Tampa. We got four games left against Tampa on the road and three at home. I'm still only watching Tampa.
I don't care how they get in. I trust Chris Sale on a one-game basis. I think we can win.
I trust Chris Sale on a one-game basis, too. I want Chris Sale's bullets in the chamber for game one of the ALDS. I don't want to play in that wild card game. The wild card game, to me, is a fluke. One-game playoffs in baseball don't exist for a reason or didn't exist for a reason. And I just don't want to go there.
Guys, here's where I'm at. it's nice to have Chris Sale back, but for the last 3 days in a row, it felt like we didn't have him at all because we
That's
were
because his fire wasn't there.
We were losing before he came back, and the losing continued after, and they kind of protected him by bringing him back in the Baltimore series, and now he misses the New York series, and he's going to pitch to Texas on Friday night. But it still feels like the same team now that he's even back. And we have Kyle Schwarber, and Cora didn't even put him in the lineup tonight.
Don't have a problem with that, though. He played, what, 4 games in a row? And he had 1 game of rehab?
DH him like you did Plawecki. I know I was clamoring for Plawecki, but that was until we got Schwarber back. And
I don't mind it against the lefty. I don't mind that lineup choice. But what I do mind about it is not using him in a pinch hitting type role in the 7th or 8th inning as we get deeper.
I have no problem. Go ahead, Andrew. I know some people are mad about Plawecki or Schwarber not coming for Plawecki. Plawecki's 380 over his last 50 at-bats.
Oh, I'm not taking Plawecki out of that situation.
Some people were on Twitter. Like, if you looked on Twitter, people were like, what the hell? Like,
I would have had Schwarber on deck for Verdugo.
I would have been fine with that. Yeah, I just wasn't taking – I don't know. I wasn't taking the bat out of his hands.
But at this point in the season, I'm not taking the bat out of Plawecki's hands at any point. He's the only guy that I can count on right now.
Well, he's not going to DH that much, though. And when he catches, everybody's running at will. Aaron Judge was stealing on him last night. Yeah, and
I gave the stat last time we were on, and at that point it was 26 to 30 base runners stole on him.
So Terry, here's my question, right? And Andrew, this goes for you, too. Terry, you mentioned they were protecting Chris Sale. Am I the only one who thinks that was a call from ownership?
I mean,
no, I don't think
they waited a year plus. Why? I don't mind them protecting an asset because
I don't mind that either. I just mean, you know, to put him in against Baltimore versus in that last game against Tampa, that one day of difference.
I don't mind
that. Was like an ownership decision. That's like,
no,
we've been talking about how this guy is going to save our bacon for the last month so that we don't have to spend any money. He needs to win the game, the first game he pitches. Call me a conspiracy theorist, but to me, that's the whole reason behind him not pitching against Tampa.
I think it would be a Bloom or Cora thing, really. But yeah, he came in a junk game that almost anybody else could have won on Saturday. I mean, that was the one game the offense showed up anyway. We put up 16 runs, but I would have wanted him against the toughest opponent, and we didn't do it. And we're a mess right now, guys. We're not hitting the baseball. We just got shut down for the second time in a month by Andrew Heaney in a game that was
better than 9. We're better than 9 in a row.
What is Alex Cora doing? What is Alex Cora doing to get these guys riled up and dialed in? Because it looks like he's doing nothing. It's like he's in that.
But
it's like he's in that clubhouse, and he's being a guidance counselor, and he's not being a leader. And
he can't make Devers hit, though. I mean, that's the issue. The bottom of the lineup's been hitting.
Are you Are you seeing urgency, though? I'm not seeing urgency. I'm seeing a team that's sleepwalking.
I mean, he's pressing all the buttons.
I mean, he's a cool guy. He doesn't panic. He's not one of those guys.
Well, Andrew,
if he was just pulling the Aaron Boone right now, though, if he was pulling the Aaron Boone and talking about it to the media about how many buttons he's pressing and how much he's trying, then I'd be concerned. I'm actually not concerned about Alex Cora right now. He's doing what he can with what he's got, and what he has is not enough, and that's Heim Bloom's fault.
I
mean, it's not. It's JD not hitting with runners in scoring position. It's Devers not hitting with runners in scoring position. Every time I want to criticize Xander, he comes through with like one hit in a series. I'm like, well, shit. Now I can't criticize him, but I feel like the bats of your 3, 4, and 5 guys are not strong enough. I will say, and I tweeted this out yesterday, I hated the Travis Shaw pitch hit against.
So did I.
For Dalbec. Dalbec's been on one lately. He absolutely has. And I know
he's one of the only players who's actually hitting.
Yeah. He's hitting it hard when he's making it out. When he's making it out, he's hitting it hard.
He doesn't and do well late in games, though.
He's been seeing the ball. Travis Shaw hasn't done it in 2 years. I thought it was stupid. I didn't think Travis Shaw earned that at bat. And that's the one move I've been adamantly against. I don't like the Travis Shaw signing, and I don't like Travis Shaw being in the game. I don't think he has a position there. And Christian Arroyo, come on back, baby. Just come on.
That's a spot where I would have liked to see Christian Arroyo. Obviously, it would still would have been righty-righty, which was what Cora is trying to avoid there. But I don't like getting rid of Dalbec in that spot. He's finally been hot for the first time since 2020. So I wasn't a big fan of that move, but I'm not going to criticize that move because that didn't lose us the game.
Not in that spot, though.
Three straight strikeouts.
There was an at-bat.
Yeah, that was terrible.
There was an at-bat late in the Baltimore series. It was game two or three. The bases were loaded, and a fastball was grooved right down the middle, and Bobby struck out. I don't want Dalbec in that spot. It sucks that Travis Shaw had to be the guy. I'll give you that. But
I'm going to be honest, Terry. I was thinking to myself, I would really rather see Dalbec than Kike. I mean, Dalbec than Travis Shaw. And the reason was, I don't want to hit into a double play. I thought Travis Shaw was going to hit into a double play there for sure. And I was like, no. Just let him strike out. We'll just take the out. Give the bat to Kike. Move on.
Well,
but even that didn't work.
Shaw had a pretty patient at bat. He drove the ball. He probably had the best at bat of anybody in that inning.
He did, which is why I'm not going to criticize the move.
When a guy over his last 15 games is hitting 410, or 324, sorry, that was, I think he earned it, and I think it was kind of a blow to his confidence, which that was the other thing, because Cora doesn't do that, and he protects his guys, and he has his guys back, and he didn't have it there, you know, he took the at bat out of Bobby's hands, which how does that what message does that send to a player?
When you suck, you're gone. And I can't get rid of you because Chaim Bloom won't give me adequate players at first base.
Well, I mean, Bobby is actually, if you look at his numbers, he's pretty much what Carlos Santana is, or was. And
no, I understand that. I'm just going to take any chance I can to attack Chaim Bloom because I think he screwed this ball club over.
This team, there's something wrong with the Red Sox right now analytically. We've seen the Rays make adjustments the second or third time through the order on how they're going to attack the starting pitcher. And we saw the Astros do it when they throttled us twice back in the month of June. The Red Sox just aren't up to par analytically from the batter's box like some of these other teams are. And they need to figure that out. They need to figure that out. And Tim Hyers has been a great hitting coach. We've had some great offensive seasons with him. But maybe he's at the end of his shelf life and a change is going to have to be made in the offseason.
I'm not calling for anyone's job. I think they're going through a hard stretch right now. I mean, this is a bad stretch of baseball. I don't think it should cost anyone a job.
Well, I don't think so either.
No. I take that back. Fabulous over at third base. He can go get. He can get bad.
Well, look, the way I look at it is, this is the worst stretch since Beer and Chicken in 2011. This is the worst stretch. We had a 10.5 game lead over the Yankees. Excuse me, 9.5 on July 26th, and now it's August 18th, and we're a half a game back from them. And especially if this next week isn't great, it should be a better week because the schedule's weaker. But if it isn't, this bad stretch is going to be talked about for probably years to come.
Should it though? Because no one had any expectations for this team.
They built the expectations for themselves, Andrew. It's still a collapse, right? Like no one had any expectations before Mike Tyson, before he was Mike Tyson. But you build the expectations. No one had any expectations for anybody until they showed up and played.
You had the division.
They're still in the playoffs right now, though.
Okay, but they're in the playoffs by other people's doing. It's not them taking care of business. They have the lowest winning percentage in baseball since the trade deadline, with the exception of the Orioles. And that difference is by 2 games. We just swept them in 3 games.
We've
so
won.
If you take those out of it.
Six of our last 20 is the number.
The worst winning percentage in baseball.
Yeah, they're not doing good right
baseball
now.
Since
they're definitely terrible. Oh my God. You gotta. That's so stupid. They literally. He would blow past the tax threshold if they let him. You know who doesn't let a team blow past the tax threshold? Major League Baseball. The Red Sox have spent probably the second most money of any team in the last 20 years behind the Dodgers. They year in and year out, they keep spending money. So don't call them cheap. It's so stupid. Did we really want to trade Tristan Cassius for Craig Kimbrell? Do we really want to do that? Let's be honest with ourselves.
I'll maintain that the mistakes were made last offseason. That's where the majority of the mistakes were made. When you could have signed them for money only and not given up prospects.
But who? Who were they signing?
Not Garrett Richards.
Who? So, Jake Odorizzi for 3 years?
I would have done it.
Who doesn't have an arm?
I wouldn't have. You know damn well I would not have signed Corey Kluber. But,
no, I know you wouldn't have signed. Kluber.
But
Odorizzi's been trash. Quintana's been trash. All these free agents. Actually, Bauer's going to prison.
Yeah. I would have fell into that trap, to be honest with you, especially if it was going to be a 3-year deal. But I would have been fine with Odorizzi, and he's only had one bad start recently, and it was 2 or 3 starts ago. Unless he had one the last day.
Not rehashing this one. Odorizzi's a loser. Richards is a loser. Quintana's a loser. They all stunk.
They all sucked. We got the best of the worst because we're not saddled with any contracts.
The mistake was attaching David Price for seven and paying half his contract to the Dodgers.
That was
David Price.
No.
But half his contract, we shouldn't be paying that.
I mean,
I don't want David Price on this team.
Eating his contract is what made me dislike that move.
Eating his price is how we traded Mookie, who's I'm not 100% sure, but I think he died.
Who's that?
They might have Mookie Betts. Donated his body to science.
Something like that.
Mookie Betts is by far a terrible contract. He'll never live up to that contract. The Red Sox were right to move him. Upset that they're going
to
say, we have no money after you move.
They're not saying they have no money. They're at the tax line. They're literally like a dollar under it.
Pay the tax. You didn't pay it last year at reset. Pay the tax.
We can all agree to disagree on where the mistakes were made and what the specifics of each one were, but I'm going to maintain for the rest of my life, if anybody asks me about the 2021 season, that there's no way Chaim Bloom thought this team was seriously going to contend with Martin Perez and Garrett Richards as his two signings. There's just no way. And in my opinion, we were accidentally in first place in late July before Tampa finally overtook us. And then the deadline, the prices were too insane do much.
They were ridiculous.
Unless something unforeseen, and I kept referring to it as the Chaim Bloom magic, maybe somehow wind up with a mid-level starting pitcher. And at that point, did we really need a pitcher? We needed bats, to be honest, and we didn't get them. So,
no, truthfully, it would have been great to get an arm. No, it would have been – Kyle Schwarber was taking ground balls at first today. But it would have been great to have another reliever. I would have loved a relief pitcher. But I watched Daniel Hudson get traded for the Padres' number 4 prospect. And Daniel Hudson let up an absolute moonshot walk-off homer against the Rockies yesterday in my own backyard. And he's been ineffective. Craig Kimbrell's been ineffective. The prices were – just ridiculous. And I like that the Red Sox traded all the Ramirez they didn't blow into their farm system too much. And I don't think it was a mistake not to trade Nick York at the deadline for some, you know, seventh inning reliever.
Okay, we've now gone on three straight shows, Andrew, where we've had a losing series. So my question is now looking forward. Like, what do we do in the next 9 games to take the pressure off?
Do you win?
Besides win.
You
Besides
hit.
Win.
You hit.
Is it hitting? And is it pitching? Is it bullpen?
You hit is the main thing, because they're not hitting right now. And they didn't even get stomped by the Yankees, which is the most frustrating thing. They just were just a step behind. They were hitting the ball right at guys every single time, and you need your heart of the order to come through. It's frustrating. But knowing at the deadline would have helped in any of those games.
Okay, so beyond the deadline then, where do we go from here as far as what do you want the lineup to look like against Texas? Is there a move you would make, a change you would make to get these guys fired up?
Yeah, there is. I would drop Hunter Renfroe from the 2 spot. I don't think he belongs in the 2 spot. That's not his mentality. He's gonna expand the zone on occasion, and I'd rather have him with guys on base in the 7 hole. I'd either put Verdugo, who's been pretty good lately, or I'd put Kyle Schwarber in the 2 hole and then follow it up with JD. That's the move I want to see.
Schwarber is a high on base guy, so that does make sense. Alex Verdugo,
and he was leadoff all year for Washington.
Yes, he was. And Alex Verdugo in the last month is hitting .317 with a .370 OBP. So that's a number 2 spot. That's what you want in that spot. So, but to me, Alex Cora is culpable here. Okay, he needs to fire these guys up. He can't be slapping these guys on the butt as they go into the clubhouse and then read them bedtime stories, you know, before they go to bed. Because he's not this team is not fired up. There's no urgency. I want to hear at some point this week or tomorrow that Alex Cora freaked out on the charter plane. He freaked out in the clubhouse. It was really intense. And if I hear a story like that, I'm going to be like, okay, good, good. He's, you know, he's putting his foot down, but we're not hearing that right now.
Well, now you're describing a Bobby Valentine panic move. I don't want to see that. In fact, I want to see the opposite. I want this calm, collected Alex Cora that we've seen. Who I want the fire from is the guys on this team. I want Xander Bogaerts to step up and be pissed. I want Chris Sale to step up and say, hey, I just came back after 2 years of not playing. I'm dying to win. I'm here to win. Step up. Let's play and have something go right. This team has been so bad lately that Pete Abraham of the Boston Globe is starting to look like Dan Shaughnessy. He's complaining about how bad the team is and how they suck and how this guy can't hit. And to me, it's like valid that they all suck. Right? They don't all suck. This team is good. But they're playing like they don't want to be there.
Ian Brown and Rob Bradford and I'm sure one or two others have been throwing these brutal stats out there, just destroying the team. Red Sox Stats, who has half of this podcast blocked, is destroying the team right now. So
As they should. And if you look at those stats, the people most accountable are the guys that should not be underperforming, and that's the most annoying part of all this. Our big money players need to come through, and this sucks that they're not, especially when you have other players pulling their weight finally. And it's just like at the beginning of the year, we're like, oh my god, imagine if the bottom of the lineup was hitting at the same time, and now it's like, come on, like 3, 4, 5, get this crap together, and we're gonna be, you know, they could be a wagon if everyone starts hitting at the same damn time.
I'm at the point where I'm hoping that damn time is the day after tomorrow in Texas. I think we could rattle off 3 straight sweeps right here. Like, I'm not at the point where I'm pressing the this season is over button, because we have 3 against Texas.
No,
it's not over.
It's not over.
We need to win 7 of 9.
I've got my hand I've got my hand over that button right now. It's if this is the button, here's my hand. Here's my hand.
I pulled up the cover, right?
One last thing about Cora, because I just want to throw it out there. This year, not that good. Not that good so far. And if it ends with us winning only 82, 83 games, missing the postseason, that's not good. 2019, not good. You had most of your World Series team still intact. Granted, some injuries happened, but we were done before those injuries happened, if we're being completely honest. And I'm talking about Chris Sale, David Price going down, you know, in late August. So 2 out of 3 seasons weren't good. Perhaps the worst thing that could have happened to him as a manager and kind of, you know, settling into a manager's role was winning a World Series his first year. Maybe we're better off if he wins it in his third year. I'm just saying.
I don't disagree with you, Terry. I think he came into his second year.
He is now.
Second year.
But he's managing this year like it's 2018. You know, with the aggressive resting, with the lack of urgency.
He came into 2019 with this mentality that they'd already earned it.
I think the players went in with that.
But Cora didn't lay it down. Like, no, this is day one. That's his job. It's to set expectations for this team and keep everyone on those expectations all year long. I don't think he's fallen victim to that this year. I think this year, the opposite. He went on the radio and said his goal for this team is to reach the World Series.
He did say that. That
should currently be the goal. So to me, Cora's not the issue. He's pressing every single button he can. He just can't get them all to work at the same time. Not everyone's clicking. It can happen. And it won't be Cora's fault if this team underperforms. It won't be his success if they all of a sudden start clicking and win.
How many games they've left? 50?
No, not even.
44.
Yeah.
How many is it? 44?
Yeah.
All right. If they go 500, that's 94 wins.
I think it's 37 games left, if I'm not mistaken. Actually.
All right. So
I'm sorry,
18 more wins.
Series there.
So that's 87. So they need
to go 600.
Yeah, this team can win 94 games. Easy.
They need to win 7 of their next 9. Like, this is it. This week, if they don't win 7 games against Texas, Minnesota, and the Cleveland Guardians, then it's over. Then we can stop recording for 3 weeks, Terry, because this team will be absolutely brutal.
I don't even know if we want to save this for our, you know, preview section. I'm saying 8 out of 10. Or 8, you know.
Cleveland has some pitchers that, for whatever reason, would shut us down. And the perfect example is that is game 2 of the doubleheader with Lucas Heal. I mean, young pitcher, we hadn't seen much of him. I think he's only had 1 or 2 starts previous to that anyway.
Who's pitching for that one?
I'm talking about when we get to Cleveland. That's just a team that we can drop 2 out of 3 before we know it in a series like that. But I'm pretty pessimistic. But a lot of people are mentioning and making observations about Cora's handling of the starting pitching staff too. And I didn't have a huge problem going to Whitlock for 2 innings and then to Barnes.
No,
it was a 1-run lead.
That's your ideal situation.
Yeah. But
isn't that what we,
there's going to be situations where people could make a case for Houck because the next 3 batters he was going to face were hitless against him. So That's where some of the criticism is coming from, and eventually you have to let these guys figure it out, and you need to assist with the development. For Heim Bloom and Alex Cora to sit at a podium at the beginning of the season and say analytics aren't everything, and yet come to find out they are, that drives me nuts.
I would have had an issue if Houck looked sharp with his pitches that day, and he didn't look like he had a feel.
Well, he bounced back from that second or third inning.
He didn't look like he had a feel, and he was still better than Garrett Richards. He was still better than Martin Perez. And you can only go some days in a row.
shit, I'm gonna buy Garrett Richards. If there is one stud that we can touch on this series, since coming out of the bullpen, it's G Money himself. It's Garrett Richards. And honestly, I'm happy to see him succeed. You don't see guys have this kind of accountability. And I know everyone hates him, and I get it. He was your free agent pitching signing. No one saw them banning Spider Attack, which they should have banned years ago. Well, he wasn't even do that. He was sunscreen rosin. It's good to see him starting to succeed in a role that maybe he's better suited for going forward for the rest of his career. And I hope he succeeds, because if he does, this is a great asset out of the bullpen, because now he can hop in on the back end of the Tanner Houck series or appearances if this is actually not an aberration and if it's for real. Because if he can give you 3 or 4 innings.
Garrett Richards is the closer?
No, he's
the long guy now.
He's your long guy, and a long guy managers would dream of having if this is actually what he's going to be.
Yeah, as much as I hate that guy and I hate his face especially, I have expressed optimism that this could work for him, that type of a role. And he went 4 innings tonight, didn't give up a single hit. It was nice to see. And I mean, we all seem level-headed. We want him to stay in that role. You might see other people clamor for him to go back into the rotation, maybe even some beat writers, and I don't want to see that. As bad as Pivetta looked tonight, I still don't want to see that. So
I'll gamble on Nick any day of the week.
Well, he had a couple...
Over Richards, that is.
He had 2 or 3 good starts coming into this, including
I want to see Connor Siebold.
Well, he got shelled, didn't he, just recently? Something happened.
I don't care. I want to see him. Shake something up. That's a shake-up move.
All right. Well, let's... we're about at the hour mark, so let's just dive into the... Oh, crap. I'm on the MLB one.
Dive into the next series.
Yeah. Do you got them up?
I do indeed. Do you need them?
Well, I think I got them now, actually. Unless this one has all the TBDs, which keeps happening. But nope. All right. Friday night, Dane Dunning versus Chris Sale. Admittedly, I don't know much about Dunning. I don't watch a lot of Texas Rangers games. I don't remember him from the first series, but that was like in April anyway. But he's pitching to a 4.06 ERA, which on the Red Sox would be pretty solid. So hopefully we show up.
Win.
Absolutely win. Dunning is the pitcher that's going to give Rafael Devers a get-right game if there is one. Righty versus lefty matchup should favor Devers. If the big three can't hit against Dunning, then we're in real trouble, because he's actually pitching to an ERA that's far lower than his ability. He should be a 4-5, 4-6 guy. He doesn't have a lot of weapons. We should win this game.
Game 2, Jordan Lyles versus Eduardo Rodriguez. I do remember the Jordan Lyles start, and I think he shut us down for about 4 innings, and then we kind of got to him late before he was taken out in that start. He goes against Rodriguez.
Win.
Got not much to say about these. This is going to be wins.
All right. On Sunday.
He's pitching to a 5-5 ERA, Terry. I mean, you can't pick him to win the game unless you're picking the season to end.
1-5 in his last 7 games with 6.8 ERA.
Well, I just saw Andrew Heaney shut us down, and he's been mauled by like
Andrew
zoo animals.
Heaney is weirdly good against us.
Yeah.
It's so annoying.
All right. So I might have Andrew Heaney flashbacks, although I think game 2 is probably fine. Dunning, for some reason, kind of worries me for some reason. But game 3, Colby Allard, who I think we did hit pretty hard in April, goes against Nathan Eovaldi. So I'm probably going to pick Eovaldi every time, even though he won't get the run support. But
sweep it up. He's 1-5 in his last seven, just like last scrub, I forgot his name, and he's got a 7.12 ERA. Yeah, I'm not joking about this. I think we're going to beat the absolute crap out of them.
And my favorite part about this Arlington series...
No, it's in Boston.
Even better. My favorite part about this series at home against Texas is going to be when somebody gets hit by a pitch, gets angry, maybe there's a couple of words exchanged. I don't think anyone's going to, you know, have a fight or anything because it's Texas and they don't want to be there. But I'd like to see some heat. If Dunning comes out and he plunks Kike Hernandez on the back, I'm not going to be upset with that.
Well, if we're going to have a fight, I want to bring up Franchi.
Yeah, that'd be a good guy to throw out there.
Get Khalil Mack running right out of the dugout.
Yeah, Franchi's a rugged guy. All right, well, you know, this was kind of a scatterbrained episode, but that's going to happen on a stretch like this.
It happens to get swept.
Yeah. We may do an episode of deep dives. Typically, we would record that tonight. We may record something tomorrow. So I'm not going to promise that episode or a specific format, but I did talk to Charlie, and we may still put something together. So good possibility. More content will be released 24 hours after this one. And then we'll definitely be back on Sunday night to talk about this Texas Rangers series, which Andrew promised to be a sweep.
Bobby Dalbec, 2 home runs, 7 RBIs.
Last time you said that, he had 9 RBIs, so I'm holding you to that.
That sounds disgusting. But have a good weekend, everyone. Take care.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply, in-app only.